You are listening to episode 129 on the Africana Woman podcast, Talk About Money with Nkomisa Ndelu. My name is Chulu, your host. Let's go. Hello, beautiful. How are you this week? Listen, the other week I sent my son to buy onions, okay? So I sent him to the market and he came back with one that was 10 kwacha. I was like, what? Where are we going, guys? Where are we going with this? You know, between the skyrocketing price of milimio and the way it's being policed in stores, plus load shedding, I've told the people in my house to just forget about Nshima, you know? One, I'm not going to stand in those lines for milimio. Am I back in KK times? No. Number two, I do not want to be cooking in Shima over an Mbaula. I know. Problems. But girls, listen. I tried it. I did not like it. It did not look cute. And let's not forget about cooking oil, okay? I remember back when I used to eat meat and chicken used to be 30 kwacha. Like, do you remember those days? Now I'm looking at posters and they're selling one ka chicken between 110 kwacha to 150 kwacha. Come off ye. Hey, guys, how are you doing it? Please explain to me, huh? Like, how many portions are you getting out of one chicken? Nishimi, when the ladies in the market increased a vegetable bunch by one kwacha, I was so offended. It used to be two kwacha, now it's three kwacha. At being a vegetarian is expensive. Yeah, bah, guys, get it together. All I'm saying is that the times and the economy has me restructuring our meals in the house. I mean, one soap, one water is about to be one water chabe. Like, we have to talk about money. Ooh. In the Visionaries, we had a masterclass about planning for retirement. And I asked our mentor, how do you take into consideration inflation as you plan for your retirement, right? And she gave me this whole calculation and I was like, okay. Yeah, it's a lot. But anyway, gotta do it. But she also said something interesting. She said, as much as we want to plan, like, you know, when we think about retirement planning, we're thinking about, oh, the money. So we have that number that we want to plan for. But you should also be thinking about where you want to retire. You know, because if you live in like the capital city or the bigger cities, it's much more expensive than the cost of living in small towns. So, yeah, retirement planning is not just about the money. You should also be looking at, you know, looking after your health right now so that you reduce your medical bills in the future. Or think about becoming self-sufficient by planting your own vegetables, that sort of thing. Over and above, I just think that as women, we should be talking more about money. We think about it all the time, but I don't think we actually talk about it enough. Right? I don't think we have enough safe spaces of where we feel like, oh gosh, someone won't judge me, or they won't think about me in a certain way, or they, you know, they won't start planning on the money that I have, which I've been trying to save or whatever it is, you know. And I just, I really, really do wish that more women are talking about money in an intentional way, right? And in the Africana Woman Visionaries this year, we're doing a money challenge. I think I've mentioned this before and I'll keep mentioning it because it's important to me, you know. So we're doing a money challenge and we're using Jane Mazimba's book, Catching Fire. It has weekly money challenges for a whole year. So right now we're up to, I think, week 18. So each week we get to talk about money from different angles. And I really appreciate learning about how other women are handling their money or picking up tips from them. And then at the Africana Woman Festival, the theme at the Indaba is securing your future. And we're going to have a session that is specifically on finances. How do you secure your finances for your future? So we're going to go into depth on what you need to put in place, especially women who are entrepreneurs. I think it's easy to forget about preparing for our future when you're an entrepreneur, right? Because you're thinking, oh, my resources need to go into the business, need to go into whatever it is that you're building. But you know, when you're in formal employment, you'd have those, monthly deductions, you know, like your pension, it's going out automatically and something is going towards your future. But sometimes we forget about it as entrepreneurs. So this session is a must attend. And I hope that you've got your ticket for the Africana Woman Festival. Go to our website, africanawoman.com/festival today and buy your ticket. So you are going to love this conversation today. I met a kindred spirit who is making such a big impact in women's lives, helping them manage their finances with stockpiling. This is one where you will need your pen and notebook. So just go grab that right now. Just press pause, go grab it right now and come back, okay? And then you will probably have to listen to this more than once. Please welcome the incredible Nkomisa Ndelu. Enjoy.
Nkomisa Ndelu is a mother of two, journalist by profession, humanitarian by calling, womanist by choice, founder of three Facebook communities, namely One Family, One Stockpile, One Baby, One Stockpile, and From RSA South Africa to the World. She is a member of the Facebook Community Learning Lab and a beneficiary of the Facebook Community Accelerator. Guys, please help me welcome Nkomisa Ndelu to the Africana Woman Podcast. Hi.
Hello, Zambia. Hello, Africa. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you, man?
I am good. Like we were talking before the before we started recording, and I was telling you that I'm so grateful that today it's not so hot and it's just, you know, nice and cool. There's a breeze going, so I don't feel like, you know, like I'm dying and sweating bullets. But anyway.
And or freezing your toes.
Yeah, you know. And you are you're dialing in from Durban, right?
Yes, the prettiest city in South Africa.
Do you know that next year the Africana Woman community is planning to do a retreat in Durban? So I'd love to hear, you know, different tips about things we can do.
You couldn't have chosen a better city in South Africa for all experiences. The people are incredible, right? The food is amazing. The sights are stunning. Whatever you're into, it's literally within an hour of wherever you will be in the city. So no day goes to waste, really. Just come.
Oh.
I'll even be your personal tour guide if you pay me.
Now, I'm going to take you up on that. I think people try to take people up on things, but they told me, no, you should come. I'm like, I'm here. Are you ready?
No. In Durban, look, you can meet anyone, even if it's not me. You'll never get lost.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never not know what to do, because Durbanites are happy people, generous people. You'll even forget that you're not even home, right?
Oh, that's nice. I'm excited.
That's how amazing the people here are. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of my favorite questions to ask is, what is your favorite childhood memory?
Ew. I had a generally happy childhood. I was raised by women, my mother, my aunts, our neighbors. So it's very difficult to pick one, but I will say this: every time I would get teased about my big head and I would come home crying, and my mother would say, Why are you crying? But you do have a big head. And remember what's inside that big head. That's the part you're forgetting. You focus on the big head, but what's inside? You know, I didn't appreciate, you know, the importance of those words at the time. But the older I grew, the more I realized what my mother was doing with me. And so please talk about my big head any time of the day. I'm just a happy camper because it means you see what's inside that head.
Ah, that's amazing. I love how, like mothers can just turn things around. And like you're saying, in the moment, it's like, what's this woman talking about? Does she not understand like the torture that I'm going through? But then
Can
later,
she call somebody and give some? For me, it was always one day I wish you would just call the somebody, give them a hiding, something, But now that I'm older, I realize she was trying to get me not to listen to the external noise and focus on, what's right here. So that's how I am to this day.
So you are a womanist by choice. Please explain to us, what does that mean? What does that mean to you and why?
I shy away from the word feminist because I don't particularly understand it or its meaning or what it's about. But my understanding of womanist is a person like me who chooses to do whatever I can, whatever is within my power to better the lives of women. The reason for that is, like I said earlier, I was raised by women. I was surrounded by women. Most households in my environment were headed by women. And so I learned early on about what women go through and what they put up with and what they have to do, to raise us as their kids and, to raise the communities. Because, if you grew up in my era, not in the 2000s, you grew up at a time where every mother on your street was your mother. And if you were doing something wrong, any one of them could give you a hiding. And so that sense of community that never held a meeting to say, this is how we are raising our kids, or this is what we expect of our kids. But for some reason, these women just have a common understanding of what they wanted for us. And they all gave equally to raising us as the children in the neighborhood, not necessarily that my mother was raising me or our neighbor was raising whoever, but if a neighbor is carrying bags, grocery bags, and you're walking past and you're not helping them, the next mother that's coming along will kick your butt. That kind of community, like I say. And yeah, that is what I was raised on. And that is the legacy I choose to carry forward, because right now we are raising our kids in a society where everyone is for themselves. And we tend to forget that women started the race 1,000 years after the men had. And so women need three legs up to even get to halfway where the men are. And so I'm one of those women that has said, you know what, whatever I can do, I will do it to make sure that people like me and that my daughters, because like you said, I'm a mother of two daughters, my daughters grow up in a society that is better than the society I grew up in, that is certainly better than the society that I'm raising them in now. That they know that living is not just for themselves, but living is for their community.
So I'm curious because I know that you are a journalist by profession, but that's not something that you like you started with journalism and then you moved into government. So what has your career path been like and why did you make those choices along the way?
Okay, that's a funny story. I started very young. I started in journalism when I was 19. I gave 11, 12 years of my working life, the first 11, 12 years of my working life, I gave to journalism. And I guess you can call me an overachiever because in that period, I worked for a community radio station. I was then headhunted by a local community, I mean, commercial radio station. This is like not even 4 months into me being with a community radio station. And so I grew up in this community radio station, but while I was still working there, I was again approached by Reuters, the news agency, to say, can you do some pieces for us and we'll pay you in dollars? And being in your early 20s, dollars, it was all excitement. And then I also had the opportunity to work for the British Broadcasting Corporation. So for me, it was like I've done it. I've given to this side of journalism. Now, can I join government and, try to address all those things that I've been pointing out over the years? And I did that, and not even halfway through doing that, I realized that my passion was not necessarily in a tub in the private sector or in a container tucked nicely in government. Again, my passion is with my community. And so that's when I started moving towards finding ways to now, give my time and my energy to my community, which is where the Facebook groups came from.
So, I'm currently we have a course that's going in Africana Women, which is around personal branding. And I guess there's something that was said that reminds me of what you're speaking around in terms of, a lot of times we look at our purpose and our passions, and I think social media has kind of glamorized it in a sense that when you go after your purpose and your passion, you need to be making millions and millions of dollars, lots of money around it. But I think when we were having our conversations this week, there's somebody who said, your passion or your purpose and the thing that you pursue may not always, generate a lot of money, but it's the impact that you're making. What do you think about that?
That's the whole truth, and there's nothing to add to that statement. I mean, most of the time, passion doesn't pay. All of those things that give you the good feelings, don't pay. But I can honestly say that in starting, what I'm doing now, I had no, idea that I would get to where I am at this moment. And so I can't say I started saying, oh, I'm going to make this much money and so forth. But I started with the hope that, 5, 10 years down the line, one woman will say, girl, you changed my life. If it wasn't for you, my life wouldn't be what it is today. And I mean, it's not even 10 years on, but I've had those lines, more times than I care to count. And each time still matters like the first time. And then along the way, to have a company as big as Facebook say, hey, come here. We like what you're doing. You are doing exactly what we created this platform for. Come, let's empower you with the knowledge that you need to keep doing what you're doing. And you know what? If you can take what you're doing offline and go into your community and make a difference, here's a little money for you to do it. And that has been beyond my wildest dreams, honestly, just beyond my wildest dreams.
Well, I think let's now get into what is stockpiling, because when I first heard it, I was like, I'm not too sure what that is. But as I started to like listen, and I was just like, this is something like I've been doing, and I feel like my mom has been doing, and she taught me, but I haven't had a name for it. You know what I mean? So when you were talking about some things, I was like, so people just don't do that normally.
No, people were doing stockpiling, but they were doing it incorrectly.
Okay, go ahead. What is stockpiling?
I always say stockpiling is bulk buying that went to private school. You don't just walk into a shop and, fill up your trolley and go home. You go into the shop, you fill up your trolley only when the price is at its lowest. That is the only time when stockpiling matters. Stockpiling is supposed to save you money. And if it's not saving you money, you're doing it wrong. So for example, a bar of soap is 10 rand, right? In Zambia, you use kwachas, right? So say a bar of soap is 20 kwacha, I make an example. And in this particular store, it's now at 10 kwacha. That's the best time to stockpile. You buy that soap enough to last you 6 months to a year because soap doesn't rot. Then you would have saved money for the coming 12 months. So you take the money that you would have used to buy soap for the following 12 months, you direct it to stockpiling another item that you find cheap. And so that way you build your stockpile and it's not something that you can build over a day. You can't go into a store and say, oh, today I'm going to build my stockpile. You build your stockpile 1, 2, 3 items at a time. You can never go into a store and say, I'm going to fill up my boot and now I have a stockpile. You buy whatever item is the cheapest in that moment. And also, don't just go and buy items that your family doesn't use, for example. Buy stuff that your family uses. Buy stuff that your family uses. I always say you can be a stockpiler and be brand conscious at the same time. You know, the only brands that you can be conscious or loyal to are the cheaper brands, the brands that save you money. Because if brands don't save you money, then they are wasting your money. You have no business being loyal to a brand that does not like you very much. Because if a brand charges you an arm and a leg for an item that is a necessity, then that brand cannot like you, right? So that is what stockpiling about it is about for me. It's about teaching women that can you treat your money as hard as you worked for it? Don't just throw it around as if you didn't work for it. Don't just give it away. Because sometimes, let me tell you what happened the day I started the group. So I was in the store and these women, a whole bunch of, you know, older women, like my mother's age, they're buying for their stockfell. I don't know if you have stockfells in Zambia. There's clubs of women who put money together and then at the end of the year, they go buy groceries together. And they were buying dishwashing liquid. And in the store we were in, that dishwashing liquid was 40 rand for 1.5 liter. But right next door, not across the street, right next door, as in the next door, it was 35 bucks. And I was like, do you know how much money you would have saved? You know, but you left your house thinking, I'm going to store X. And so you went to store X and you lost those 5 rand. And they were buying trolleys of the stuff. And I was like trying to count these 5 rand that these women had lost. And I got so upset that I got home and I was like, no, stuff it. I need to do something about this. And then I started doing something about it. And at the time I was just targeting my friends, my neighbors, you know, my people around me. I had no idea that the group would grow into, you know, the beast it has become today. But every time somebody says, I just did this because of the group, or I'm out of debt, or I just bought my first car, or I just bought my first house, or I'm no longer blacklisted, all of those things, those are the rands that fill my heart every single day. So honestly, I can never say I've felt broke in the last almost 8 years.
So how have you been stockpiling? Like, is this something that your mom taught you, or is this something that you, you know, when you grew up, then you decided that, okay, let me try and learn these skills. How long have you been doing it?
My mom taught me how to buy in bulk. But I mean, you know about what's happened to our economy since we were kids, right? Mm-hmm. So I took it, you know, a step further to say, yeah, I can see when I buy in bulk, yeah, things last and so forth, but how can I do this better? You know, and you know, that's where that came from. I didn't even realize that that's what I was doing in the beginning. But if you speak to my friend Slindile, for example, who we started living together when we both started working, she'll be like, "Oh, babes, but you've always been like this." I just never liked paying full price for anything. It just didn't make sense, and so I started thinking of ways to save money. For example, when the store says, "Oh, it's winter now, you must buy winter clothes," I'm like, "Actually, not. I'm buying summer clothes right now, because that's what's cheap." Then when they say, "Oh, now it's time to buy this," I'm like, I don't think so. I'm actually buying something else because I am very mindful of the fact that stores are not sitting around in their boardrooms thinking about how they can save me money. However, they are sitting around and talking about how they're going to make more money for their shareholders. And so I have to be my own shareholder and think about me. And so that's what I try to teach women, to say there's stores, there's companies that you're enriching. Hire tons of people to get your money out of your pocket. How's about you stand up for your pocket and make sure that they get as little as possible?
So in 2016, you created the group One Family, One Stockpile, right? And I know I heard you talk about how you were in another Facebook group, but then the conversation was not moving. But what do you think was the difference, though? Because it's the same Facebook, it's women, you know what I mean? Like, why were they not willing to have those conversations? And then what changed?
Let me tell you something. I don't want to be horrible about this, but I found the conversations to be just a bit shallow, contributing zero to me. Gossip, fashion. Did you see so and so's coffin? Oh, this, really? How does that change my life? You know? And then I would be the auntie with, "Look, this is cheap at this place." And then I just would get absolutely no response, to the point where I thought maybe I'm the only one who's interested in stuff being cheap and you know, all of those things. So I thought, you know what, instead of sitting here and tolerating this conversation that bores me to death, that annoys me to hell. I remember one of the conversation was about the coffin and the fashion at some celebrity who had died, and I was like, how are grown women talking about how pretty the coffin looked and how cute so and so looked? It was a funeral, you know. I was like, nah, I'm done with that, I'm gone. So, you know, that's how I left and you know, started this a baby that has now grown into what it is today.
You know, it's so funny when you say that, because when, for example, I've been on interviews and people are like, "Oh, so Africana women, so what do you do? Like, you women, you get together and you're just like gossiping." I was like, "What?" So the only thing that can come to your mind when women come together is that, oh, they're gossiping,
Gossip.
they're having very, like you said, shallow conversations. And I was just, yeah, that interview didn't go well because people were like, "Hey, Chulu, you put him in his place." But I was like, "But I just explained that, you know, when we come on the Africana Women podcast, we're having, you know, meaningful conversations." And like you said, like, what is it going to do to actually have an impact and a change in your life instead of just,
But we must
you know.
also be honest, it is women who created that impression. Because instead of spending time building each other up and talking about things that, you know, change their lives and so forth, we do tend to spend time talking about useless stuff. If you go around just Facebook as a platform, you will see a lot of useless groups and, you know, and you think, but why? You know, there's still so much to work to be done. In developing women, in improving the quality of the lives of women everywhere. And you have a Facebook group talking about this. I mean, the other day, oh gosh, I saw a thread that went viral in South Africa, and it was women talking about, who they slept with, and it didn't go well. And I was like, yo, can you just go to therapy for that? It's part of growing up. Just go to therapy if it still hurts you, or you don't have the tools within you to get over it and move on with life, because that person has long moved on with their lives and you are still, but as women, I'm saying we are also guilty of creating these impressions about ourselves. We are guilty of creating this, shallow, non-meaningful situations that we all then end up being banded with. At some point, I even say it's us who are responsible for some of the things that the men use against us. And so the day we all decide that we will speak with one voice on issues, for example, let me tell you something. Almost 8 years. No, it is actually 8 years now, since I created the group, and I still have to answer questions, but from women, why are men not allowed in this group? It's women asking me that, right? And it upsets me to no end. Why can't you be in a platform that's created for you? Why can't you enjoy it and thrive in it and take what builds you and invite the next woman to come and drink from the same well that you're drinking from? Why do you have to think about a man who is obviously not invited and will not be invited? Why? Why can't we enjoy the spaces that are created for us? When men, did men invite us to the golf course? No. We had to kick those gates down and storm the golf course. And what did they do when we stormed the golf course? They moved the conversation from the golf course. And so, as women, we need to start building a different narrative around ourselves. We need to start appreciating our own spaces. We need to stop seeking validation from men. Men don't need our validation. They are just men and they are doing their thing. But as women, for us to feel like we are women and we are complete and we were accomplished and we've done the things that we set out to do, we need a certain man to come and say, yes, good job, well done. We cannot take it from another woman, no. And that's very sad.
It is. I know a lot of. I feel like we face the same type of situations because you find a lot of men who be like, "So can I join this?" And I'm like, "It does say Africana woman, but I
To this day, I still decline in excess of 200-300 men trying to join the group. This is despite the fact that in the group description, it says this group is for women. But you still have men trying to come in. It says it's for the mom, but you still have men trying to come in. It's very clear about who it's for. When I take media interviews, whether it's magazine, newspaper, or television, I make it clear that I don't leave out the fact that it's women only. But guess what? You still find men trying to come in. And it saddens me. It really saddens me that, because for me, I'm like, dude, we don't come into your platforms and try to bring our own agendas, but here you are trying to do it, But guess what? Guess what? I just told you, right? On the one family, one stockpile, I decline 200 to 300 men every day. Guess how many men I decline on the one baby, one stockpile group? Less than 10.
They don't want to learn about looking after children, huh?
Less than 10. And sometimes I don't decline any man at all. Four, five, six, but
Parenting,
10
not
is a
even
lot.
kids.
Never 10. Mm-mm.
Interesting. Interesting. So, Last year, you won a grant, which was from Facebook, and it was up to $40,000, which is about 736, 200 rands. And this was to fund the work that you're doing. So I'm really curious about what did you manage to do with it? Is it are you still build What are you still building? And yeah.
So, as part of the Community Accelerator program, we were required to pitch. So, you had to pitch an idea of a project or program that you wanted to implement in the physical world. And this had to be something that is in line with what you do online, but now you are doing it, off cyberspace. And the one thing that I've always wanted to do, and this was taking from lessons in the group, okay? I pitched for Money Conversations. Money Conversations with young women at institutions of higher learning, because the Facebook group, One Family, One Stockpile, has taught me over the years that money is not discussed in families, period. If you hear your mother say, "I don't have money," that's all the discussion you have in the majority of our families. Where do you think I get the money? Do you think money grows on trees? I told you I don't have money. That's all the discussion on money that happens within families. And so I wanted to have these conversations because, again, from lessons within the group, I learned that women get into huge financial transactions, not even understanding what's going on. You find somebody saying, "I bought this car, I thought I was finishing this year, and now I'm being told there's a balloon payment." No, you had a balloon payment the day you signed the deal. That's what they told you. But you were too excited and to just get the key and get in the car and go show mom that you weren't even listening, or if you were listening, you weren't processing enough to ask the question, "What is this residual?" or "What is this balloon payment?" You have women, "Oh, I want to buy a house, but I'm told that my credit score this. What is a credit score?" Simple information that you think that people who are employed and enter into this transaction have accounts, you think that they would know these things, but they don't. And so I had to go back and say, what conversations are young women in institutions of higher learning having, right? And one, I learned that they're not having any, because they're not having any at home to begin with. Two, at varsity, they're already making the mistakes that got their parents to where they are right now, where they can't buy a house, where they can't buy a car. I also learned that financial institutions are guilty. They are accessories to some of, the atrocities that are being perpetrated against young people at varsities. Because how on earth do you give me an account when you know for a fact that I'm unemployed? You even say, "Bring a student card to open an account." How do you think I'm going to pay for this account? Right? So it's all of those things that I wanted young people to be conscious of. The first university I went to said, "No, we actually have a financial institution give those conversations." And I thought, "No, you don't." And when I followed up afterwards, and I found that they're talking about an insurance company that comes and speaks to students about over investing in insurance even before they start working, not the conversation I wanted to have. Because I mean, I have my own ideas about insurance, and it's like black people investing in death, covering the dog in the family in case they die. All of those things. For me, those are the things that, we don't talk about enough in our families. We don't talk about the financial abuse of the one sibling that makes it within the family, who's then expected to take over the responsibility of running the home and feeding the children of their siblings and their girlfriends and their cats and their dogs. you know, all of these conversations are not being had in our homes, and you find, you know, I used to be, I'm an only child, let me declare up front. And when I say I started working at 19, I started working, and when I turned 20, and I was offered this position at this commercial radio station, that's when I moved out of home. So by the time I graduated, I was not living at home already. So I thought that's how, you know, it's supposed to be for everyone. And I really judged people who lived at home beyond 25, because what are you still doing at home, you know? Until the money conversations. And that's when I learned about the horrors of what some people are going through within their own families, you know, moms forcing daughters to build a home that they failed to build to pay the fees for the other sibling because the mother failed to plan for the other sibling. And, you know, a lot of things that made me cry on more than two or three nights until I was like, no man, where have I been? Why didn't I know this? You know, and I'm not talking about what is called black tax. Black tax is voluntary. This is you deciding, you know what, this is the home that raised me, and I've made it in life, and I'm going to take this much to contribute towards, you know, the running of my household. In some families, you have mothers who say, half your salary, thank you. So that's why people are not able to progress in life, because parents are here with the demands, you know. You have students who, on their internships, are sent to the banks to borrow money. But when it's time to repay this money, they are on their own. So by the time they start working, they're already blacklisted, you know. So it's all of these things that I uncovered. And, you know, when this info, you know, when you go out to look for something and you come back and you're like, okay, hang on, what is all this? Where do I start? I went to my cousin and I said, my cousin is an accountant. I said, look, I wanted to initiate money conversations. I wanted to just raise consciousness amongst young people before they start working, before they get approached by these companies and get offered all these traps. My cousin said, that's too broad, because you need to narrow it down to one little thing. And so we narrowed it down, and I called a financial wealth expert to say, you know what, help me with this. And she did a great job in laying the foundation. And when we were done for the day, then the kids came back and said, N what now? You're just going to leave us like that? You know? And I was like, I hadn't thought of it beyond today. You know, but I'm hoping now that, you know, you are aware of these things, you know, you will make better decisions. And they were like, there's a lot we still need to talk about. And so I thought, okay, let's have, you know, the money learning circles in our universities. They'll be like your clubs, like you have Christian clubs, you have, you know, culture clubs and so forth. Let's have them talk about money though. And where they get stuck, then they would invite me. If it's a subject I can carry, or I would get somebody to come and talk to them if it's a subject I can't carry. I know these kids are interested in investing in property and all these other things, and I'm not as expert in any of the fields. Like I said, I'm just a journalist. Mine is to bring information to people, and sometimes, you know, I need someone else to give me the information to bring to people.
So, how many universities are you working with right now?
Right now, we are on three, working on the fourth.
Okay. And if somebody is listening to this and they're thinking, hey, we would love for you to come on board, and you know, is that a possibility, or it's something that you're rolling out slowly in your own time?
Okay. It's something that I would love to do at 1,000% speed because I know there is a need. But, right now, I have to balance, you know, bringing money for my kids, meaning I have to earn an income and, doing the work other moms should have been doing with their kids, and I enjoy doing it, but I have to, balance it with, earning money for my kids and sharing what's little that I get for my kids with everyone else's, because now the Facebook money is gone. So whatever it is that I'm doing extra is from my own money, So I have to make sure that my kids don't hate me to begin with. So I'm not as available as I can be, but I try. We have WhatsApp groups, for example, with the different campuses that we're working with. So most of the conversations now are happening on WhatsApp. All right. And then they have their own internal conversations amongst themselves. But my plea to everyone, whether in Zambia or Egypt or Nigeria or wherever, please don't let your child leave your house without you sitting them down and talking about money. Your kid, I mean, let me tell you a story that you didn't ask for because you said we can talk about anything. So when I sent my daughter to university, she was accepted in Bloemfontein, which is in another province. And so she went on her own in January, but I knew that I would have to follow in February to get her set up and situated and so on. And so I went to Bloem. And it was over a weekend. So I get there and we have to buy the kettle, this and that and the other. And I promise you, in every mall that I went to, there were children pushing trolleys full of alcohol. Kids pushing trolleys full of alcohol. And I was stunned, like, what is going on? And my daughter says, no, those are NSFAS beneficiaries. And I'm like, you mean that's my tax money in those trolleys? NSFAS is the government scheme for underprivileged kids. And I'm like, so they get and they do this? Oh, hell no. So I came back all self-righteous and I wrote on, Facebook, all kids in Bloemfontein are getting drunk on our money, da 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 da. And obviously, people I have on Facebook were like, girl, before you speak about kids in Bloemfontein, how's about you go to UKZN just up the road from you? They're doing the same. So, why would you take a loan? Because NSFAS is a loan, it's money that you will pay when you get employed. Why would you take a loan and buy alcohol? Who does that? But your kids are already doing it. And those are the habits that they are building and learning at this formative age of their lives. This is what they're building their adulthood on if you are not intervening and having the conversation with them.
What have you found in terms of women having, necessary conversations with their children, right? And this is like so many things from let's say finances, sexual abuse. Recently in our community, we were having a conversation around when a little child is sexually abused, right? I've had conversations with women that are adults now, but something happened to them when they were younger. And I always ask, hey, did you tell your mom? Did you tell, an adult? Did you tell somebody? And the answer most times is no, I didn't tell them. So then it's like, why are the kids not feeling empowered enough to have a conversation with their parents that this thing happened to me? You know what I mean? Because and and then we're having this conversation in the community, in the group, where it's not in our culture to be talking about sex. It's not, it's very people don't feel comfortable, having these conversations, all of that kind of stuff. But I'm like, hey guys, you cannot say that no, it's not age appropriate for kids to have these conversations, but you'll find there's a predator out there who's going to come after your kid anyway, but you haven't given them any tools, you haven't empowered them in any sort, any form to do something. We cannot continue just saying that no, our culture says that we shouldn't have these types of conversations with kids. I don't know, like, really
okay.
And then it's the same thing with like money, isn't it? Because, you know, like, yep. You said, like, no, money doesn't grow on trees. I don't have money, shut down, that sort of thing. Mm. Oh, no, my child is going to go and broadcast my salary to the whole neighborhood. And then everybody will know how much I'm making. Why are we not having
let me share something with you. So, you know, when you're a journalist, you learn about the most horrific things that happen to kids, right? And so early on, I knew that I would not even leave the sex conversation to my mother. My mother can talk about other things, but the sex conversation I'm having with my kids, the rape, sexual abuse, inappropriate touching, inappropriate looking. I was having that with my kids, right? And I remember one of my friends, Unozipo, would bring her kids to me because I'm not afraid to talk to kids about sex. But for me, I was never going to be that mom who raises a kid who gets raped and gets to court and says, Uncle so-and-so put his cigarette in my ashtray. No, ma'am. My kids grew up knowing what a penis is. My kids grew up knowing what a vagina is. My kids grew up knowing who is allowed to touch them where and when is it inappropriate. My kids grew up knowing all of that. And it's the same thing with money. I find that as a society, we've improved somewhat when it comes to talking about sex. And I'm saying, let's do to money what we have done to sex over time, because a long time ago, sex was not a conversation that was had comfortably. Now we are somewhat comfortable with talking about sex, and I want us to get to a point where we are now comfortable talking about money, where kids understand what the household income is and how much goes to what expense in the home, so that they know what to expect throughout the month. For example, my daughter has an allowance. She knows that whatever she gets else over and above an allowance is a treat, because she doesn't leave at home. So for example, when we go out as a family, I will drop her a couple of hundred so that she can treat herself while in Bloemfontein. But she has zero expectation of anything else, because she has an allowance. Her phone is on contract. She gets a certain amount of airtime, and I pay a commune that has Wi-Fi, so I have no business buying her data. And she knows that if she chooses to waste her airtime in 1 week, then she will spend the rest of the month without airtime, because I get paid once a month. So there's no way she's coming back twice into this budget. And if she wants something, I have to be told in advance so I can plan for it, budget for it, and then she can have it. We don't do now and right now. It doesn't work. And these are the conversations that parents need to have. Another bad habit that I discovered was parents just, I can't say not being able, just choosing not to live within their means, living the life of loans and loan sharks and this and that. And then come this time of the year, people are hysterical because now they must pay back the loan money and they don't have it. You know, and so these are the things that I wish we could speak openly about and say, you know what, if you earn 2,000 Rand, make do with 2,000 Rand. And if it's not enough for you, come do my laundry. I'll pay you. You know, I have two guys working in my yard at the moment because I don't mind paying somebody who wants work. But don't come to me and say, please, may I have. You're not my kid. I'm giving you nothing. Because I'm not trying to raise or be part of a society of beggars. You know, I want to empower you. Try to empower yourself. I'll help you along, but I won't cripple you by giving you anything for free. No, ma'am.
Mm. I have so many questions.
Sorry, just like
Popping up, like, oh my gosh. But we are coming to the end of the hour. Yeah. Oh my goodness. I feel like there needs to be a part two. Needs to be a part two because you're good. And I know you're like, you know, I know one thing that you found in your community is, you know, you were thinking like, you know, it's my friends, it's my family, those people that are close to me. And then suddenly you have, you know, people of other races coming in, and then you have people from other countries coming in, and you're like, oh, okay, we're actually very, very similar in so many ways, you know? But it also surprises me. Something surprised me where, you know, where you think it's like a normal thing, let's say across Africa, and you're like, wait, it's not. So for example, we were having I've got another podcast which is called Educated Africana, and we were talking about nutrition, like what do we feed our kids, you know? And so the host is South African, actually. And she was saying that she lives in Zambia, but she's South African. So she was saying that in Zambia, what she's found is we have a culture of growing our own vegetables. Like it's standard. Like, you know, you have your backyard, you're growing your vegetables and all of that kind of thing. And she's like, but at home, it's something that's not that you don't find everybody doing. And she's like, there's just some things which kind of are a bit different, like we're the same, but then there's also those little nuances that are different. So I found that very interesting because in my, like, I've grown up with it, and I'm like, but people don't do that. Like, what? Like, grow your vegetables.
Look, it is true. Personally, I don't even have a garden. I wish I did, but I don't, because the area I live in is full of stones and it's just not conducive for a garden. But my aunt has a beautiful plot in her yard and has the best spinach I've ever tasted anywhere. So when she has spinach, I visit quite often because I know I get some. We have neighbors who are using alternative methods, like using tires, using containers to grow certain things, and so forth. And it's part of the content of the group to say, you don't have to buy everything. You don't have to spend money on in on everything. Whatever little piece of land you have, use it. Grow your garden. Use stuff from, you know, your own backyard. And those are some of the conversations, because that is also a big money saver. Right now in South Africa, we are complaining about a bag of potatoes, which is about 160 rand. We are complaining about eggs, you know, with the flu that's going on, the eggs are a flipping nightmare. You know, there's a lot of onions. We are complaining about onions because, again, the same thing. And so people who have gardens are looking at us sideways and laughing at us because, you know, they had the foresight to plant and so forth. And that is part of the content of the group to say, you know what, whatever you can grow, you must grow. If you have a plot and you can, you know, raise your own chickens, raise your own chickens. You know, my father was a farmer. Interesting story. My father was a farmer, and she refused to eat any frozen meat, period. He refused to eat any frozen meat. He would ask you for the date of death, and if you can't give him the date of death, he's not eating it. He would ask you, do you know how long it takes a sheep to cross the ocean from Brazil to South Africa bringing chicken? Yeah, and you still want me to eat the chicken? How do they keep that meat edible on that sheep for it to get to me? And my child, no, that's why I have chickens outside. You want to feed me chicken, go get it outside. That's the kind of life my father lived, and he was the healthiest person I know. You know, he never got fat or whatever. Again, his vegetables came from the yard. And my father, when I say he was a farmer, he was like a farmer on steroids. Like spinach, cabbage, carrots, whatever you can think of, it came from our garden in the Eastern Cape. And so I know the life you speak about. Unfortunately, some of us don't have it, but it's a life that we definitely want. In rural South Africa, it's still the way of life, and that's why I always say, you know, the healthiest people in South Africa don't live in the cities. They live in the rural areas where they have the space to grow and raise their own food.
So true. Okay, so in the Afrikaner women community, we have a saying, which is know your roots, grow your purpose. And I'm going to ask you four questions, and you just tell me whatever comes to mind. So the first question is, what are you rooted to?
People.
People, yeah. I like that. Okay. Then what are your favorite ways to nourish your mind, your body, and your soul?
Books. Books and
Okay.
travel. Books and travel for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
books and travel.
And then do you have a weakness that has now become a superpower?
Words.
Explain that.
Let's just say you don't want to get into a fight with me because my words can kill. But as dangerous as my words can be, my words can build as well. So my words are my everything. My words are my everything, and that comes from my mother insisting early on that you are not going to be that kid that plays with plastic and all of those things. You're going to grow up playing with books and you're going to play with words. And so there's not a word that I don't know or can't use to either build if I want to build, or injure if I want to injure, or kill if I want to kill.
Ooh, that sounds interesting. So the last question is, what do you know as a certainty?
I know that by virtue of being female, I'm a superhuman. I know that women everywhere are superhumans. I wish all of them would realize that and tap into the super in their superhumanity, because if they did, the world would turn around in no time.
So beautiful. Oh my goodness. I have enjoyed this conversation. Like I said, I feel like there needs to be a part two. But how do people find you? Where, how do they join the group? And you know, how do we support you?
So my groups are on Facebook, One Family Stockpile being the biggest one. Just look for One Family, One Stockpile. It currently has about 655,000 members. That's how you know it's the correct ones, because it has been cloned by gazillion people. My one will have 655,000 members and up. One family, one stockpile. Number one family, one number stockpile. One baby, one stockpile is the same. One baby, one stockpile. It's all numbers. And then it's my passion project from RSA to the world. It's for travel inspiration. I believe as women, we do too much, we give too much, and so forth. And so we must also give to each other inspiration of how to refill our cups, and travel is my chosen method. And so that's what From RSA to the World is about. If you have spaces in Zambia that you want to share with us, you can share in that group, and we must come and visit Zambia, because for South Africans, we know Lusaga, because those who fought for the freedom of this country were in Lusaga, and that's all we know. But we don't know about the beauty of the entire country. And so From RSA to the World gives you that platform, and you will get to see what, you know, South Africa has to offer and what the rest of the world has to offer, because as members travel, they also share in that group, and maybe you'll get inspiration for your next holiday. And please, whatever you do, please make time for yourself. Be intentional about it. No husband, no kids, no mother, no nothing, just you.
Okay, I feel like I have to ask this question though. So you created something that you didn't know would grow as big as it is growing, right? And it's still growing, which is amazing. And you've got three Facebook platforms or Facebook groups. Then you also have WhatsApp groups talking about money circles, all of that. Now, I'm just like, there are people that get stressed with social media. So what are your coping mechanisms with just balancing that out in terms of it not taking over? You know what I mean?
Remember my answer to your first question. You asked about my favorite childhood memory. My mother, bless her soul, and may she continue to rest in peace, probably knew that she had given birth to a monster. And so she knew early on that she had to train me to shut external noise and just to listen to, the stuff that comes from within. Social media, I always say, is either a weapon or a tool. You decide what you m make of it or allow it to become in your life. If you choose to absorb and let in every toxic bit of social media, of course you'll get sick, right? But I choose to use social media for the purpose that I decided, and that is to build and be constructive. And you have to know that there is an entire group on Facebook of one family, one stockpile blocked members. Those were toxic people who were blocked from my group because they were not contributing towards building the group. They were just pulling in their own direction. And for me, I'm all about discipline within the group. No one belittles, undermines, insults. None of that is allowed in my groups. We're all about positivity and building each other. And if you're not contributing towards that, out the door. And I don't mind losing people, as long as I'm left with people that understand my mission and are willing to contribute to my mission. For example, I don't know if you know this brand, Fine Fragrance. It's not in Zambia yet, for sure. They make perfumes, right? I approached them a couple of months ago, literally a couple of months ago, and we started this conversation. And I said, I'm trying to give women in the group a chance, at building their lives. I've learned about the impact of poverty and so forth. And this company says, you couldn't have come at a better time. We've just started a program where we have agents selling our perfume. It's big, it's smaller bottles like this, 30 mils of perfume, and it retails for 30 rand if you're an agent, and you can sell it for up to 60 rand. And they said, look, we'll give you 1 million rands worth of stock, and you can help your community, help these women, build something, because the profit on those bottles is literally 100% with every batch you buy. And so you can feed your little family and so forth. You don't get to hold that power that gets brand to spend that much on your platform if your platform is a mess. So mine, I'm literally focused on creating a community that people don't believe exists, especially on social media, because social media enjoys this other reputation. But I'm building a community where brands are coming in to say, we want to partner with you, we want to do this with you, because brands have a reputation to uphold. And so if you have messy people who are racist, who are tribalist, who are all these awful, the xenophobic and so forth, you're not building. You're not building, and so nobody wants to work with you. But I've created a platform that brands are standing on the door and knocking and saying, hey, we want to be part of what you're doing. And when is this broadcasting before I share this secret with you?
So this will be early next year.
Okay, great. So I've just closed a deal with Crown National. Crown makes spices and soups and all these things. And I told you I'm all about, building. I have this organization that I support. It's a shelter for homeless women and children. There's about 250 residents at any given point. And Crown is going to donate 150 kilograms of soup to them every 3 months from now in November all the way into 2025. That's what I'm about. That is what I'm about. If you bring anything else that does not give me those feels, go away.
Amazing. So inspirational. Thank you so, so much for taking the time to come and speak on the Africana Woman podcast. I'm sure a lot of people will have to go back, get some notes again. Like, let me go back and listen to this. And just, yeah. Any final words that you have to say?
My plea is always with women, because we know that in the home, you don't see kids running to daddy and saying, "Dad, I'm hungry. Dad, dad." No, they go, "Mom, mom, mommy, 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 mommy." And so if mommy is not empowered with the tools to make sure that, you know, you minimize on those mummies, or you minimize on the tears around the house, mommy needs to be wise. Moms are magical people. Moms are magicians. Moms create stuff where there's nothing. And so One Family, One Stockpile is just one of those tools that moms can use. And I remember when I discovered that the group had gone beyond South Africa's borders, I saw a catalog and the currency just looked weird. And I said, "What currency is this?" You know? So I inboxed, in fact, I responded on the thingy and I said, what currency is this?" And she said, it's "Oh, the catalog is from Namibia." And I was like, "Namibia?" She's like, "Yeah, there are stockpilers in Namibia too." And I was like, "Oh, there are. What are you doing in a South African group?" And she was like, "Oh, don't worry about that. You see, whatever happens in South Africa is coming to Namibia. So we use what you guys post to plan for what's coming to us. So what you guys post is helping us plan ahead for what's coming to us." And I was like, "I had no idea." And they're like, "Yeah, that's why we follow you guys." And the Zimbabweans were like, "It's simple. We're just buying Johannesburg." And I was like, "As so is Lesotho. We also shop in South Africa. So this group is helping us a lot." But when you live home, you literally know what to expect and where you're going to buy what and so forth. And, you know, that's why we're here. And I mean, you have quite a lot of people from around SADC, and I look forward to having people from Zambia and the rest of Africa after this. But I mean, a lot of SADC is already in the group, I must say.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I do appreciate your time. And I can't wait for this to come out, like I said.
Thank you for reaching out. I really appreciate it. I forgot to ask you my question. How did you find out about One Family, One Stockpile?
My assistant, she was like, "Oh my God, there's this amazing group." Like I said, she's Zimbabwean, but she lives in South Africa. So she's a member, and she's just like, "Oh, and it's just an empowering group. It's very similar to Africana Women, and you know, you get tips in there and all of that." So she was just explaining it, and she was raving about it. I was like, "Let's do it. Let's do it."
I love that. Oh, I love that. Love it. Love, love, love it.
So shout out to Belinda, because she made this happen.
What's her name? Belinda who?
Nyoni.
Belinda, great. Look, I think what Belinda has done is show us as women again that it doesn't matter where you are. The challenges are the same. And so the solutions may also be the same. So it could be that, you know, a Zambian problem will find a solution in One Family, One Stockpile, or a South African problem will be solved by a solution that is already in existence in Zambia. We cannot live mutually exclusive as women. We have to find these spaces and create these platforms where we get to share information. So shout out to Belinda for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So what a have you learned, my babes? Yeah? What have you learned, boo? If nothing else, I hope you heard talk about money. In your friendships, you should be able to talk about money. In your relationship, you should be able to talk about money without being triggered. It is a red flag. If you cannot talk about money with your partner, your boyfriend, your husband, you should be able to talk about money with your children, because most likely the schools and universities are not talking to them about money. So you have to step up to the plate. Please do not come at me with, oh, in our culture, it's rude to talk about money. Well, we are not thriving as a people because we do not talk about money. We need to get past this culture thing, this humbleness, always associating a lot of money with witchcraft and evil. And it starts by talking about money. Anyway, as I said, you know, find a safe place. If you feel that, you know, the people that are around you right now are not particularly the best people to talk about it with, then find a safe space. Come and join the Africana Women Visionaries. We talk about money, you know, or you can create your own safe space. You can be intentional about, you know, finding friends and people who really do want to talk about money. Or join One Family, One Stockpile. Just start from somewhere, okay? It is time to give Nkumisa her roses. Find her on Facebook at Nkumisa Ndelu. Tell her you heard her on the Africana Woman podcast. Say thank you and let her know what you learned. The tickets for the Africana Woman Festival are on sale. So go to our website, africanawoman.com/festival. Go get your ticket today. The best way to support the podcast is by sharing it. Tell your friends, your sisters, your daughters, everybody, okay? Share the link. Post a screenshot on your status. Let's spread the word. Thank you so much in advance. The Africana Woman podcast is part of the Africana Woman Network. My name is Chulu, your host. Until next time.